good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. We talk about national and local Native news, and as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You can call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow, great read, Wendy.
One
you
in
should
a row.
You should have your own radio show.
Yeah, maybe I will someday.
Let's put a teaser out there about animals.
Yes,
that's awesome. I hope I can be a guest.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Hey, so it's Tuesday, so that's Nancy Bolio and her gang takes over the show, and we find out what's happening via pipelines in the deep north and the occupied north.
Yeah, Nancy Bolio is from Bemidji 350.
And Rise Coalition. Mm-hmm. Yes, one of the founders of Rise Coalition.
Yeah.
But before we get going too far into our own lives and how we're feeling as old people, Wendy, we should probably start out here with a Ogama in the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hi, Anim Buju, everybody. Thanks for passing it over to me. I wanted to cover something I touched on yesterday, but first a little bit of info on the Stop Line 3 front. It's important that you mentioned the Occupied North. The Intercept obtained documents regarding the Northern Lights Task Force and what they've been doing to set up and respond to pipeline resistance. So apparently this past September, the teams that are part of the Northern Lights Task Force, which is a coalition of state and local law enforcement and public safety agencies, gathered at Camp Ripley, which is a Minnesota National Guard training center, on the Mississippi River just south of the pipeline route. And the exercise they did was called Operation River Crossing. So the manual is actually public information, and it goes on to describe basically a situation in which a civil unrest situation with threats to public safety, including criminal damage to property, obstruction of transportation, assaults, threats to bystanders, and rioting. Basically, the fictional setup that they did was that a small group of protesters had started threatening pipeline workers and law enforcement officials and lobbing balloons filled with urine and deer repellent. Which is kind of absurd. None of the actions that have happened have had anything close to that. But I wanted to just kind of draw attention to that, that, you know, there's public money that's being spent in these exercises and getting the police ready to meet what are peaceful protesters in northern Minnesota. And currently, there's about $500,000 that has been distributed to law enforcement agencies, and that was as of March 15th, which is through the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission that is funded by Enbridge. The account is not meant to be used for equipment unless it's considered personal protective equipment. Basically, they're not even allowed to purchase like cutting tools to cut protesters who engage in direct action by hooking themselves to some sort of machinery. But in Hubbard County, Enbridge actually donated cutting tools separately from that escrow account. So they're finding ways around this. Currently at this time, no use of chemical munitions has been reported, so they haven't tear gassed anybody. But we do know from Nancy Bolio yesterday at the World Water Day that there was several hundred thousand dollars that were spent in Beltrami County that include these types of riot gear and equipment. So, you know, the next Standing Rock is definitely coming to Minnesota, right, Robert?
Oh, and yep, absolutely. We've been fearing this for a long time, and, you know, Enbridge has been getting ready for it, and so we have to resist and divest.
Always, always. So then the other thing I wanted to talk about was something I just touched briefly on yesterday. So the Star Tribune just released an article last week talking about forever chemicals, which is another thing that I believe Nancy Bolios mentioned on one of our shows at some point. So forever chemicals are also known as PFAS, P-F-A-S. They are toxic man-made chemicals. It stands for polyfluoroalkyl substances. So they're a group of man-made chemicals that have been manufactured and used in a variety of industries since about the 1940s. So a lot of the closed dumps in Minnesota are leaking high levels of this toxic chemical directly into the groundwater in Minnesota. And a growing body of science has found that there are potential adverse health effects associated with PFAS exposure, including liver damage, thyroid disease, decreased fertility, high cholesterol, obesity, hormone suppression, and cancer. These chemicals can easily migrate into the air, dust, food, soil, and water. And basically, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency wants more money to try to help determine the full scope of the problem. Groundwater at one landfill near the Iowa border in Minnesota actually shows the PFAS contamination was more than 1,000 times the Minnesota drinking water health standard, which is worse than the levels at the former Washington County landfill where the 3M company manufactured the chemical. And this is directly from the Star Tribune article. So the MPCA released the findings at a news conference and have asked the legislature for authority to tap into the state's closed landfill investment fund, which currently has about $122 million in it. The MPCA does not know how much money it's going to cost the state to tackle this problem until it examines more landfills. And they're currently creating a strategy for monitoring these chemicals at all permitted landfills and determining how best to handle basically what's happening. So these chemicals really don't break down easily, and it's difficult to get rid of them. They're not even sure if even hazardous waste incineration can destroy all of these. And even the U.S. EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is actively researching new technologies to try to destroy them, try to destroy these chemicals. So it's really, really scary news. And I wanted to bring it up and make sure that we were able to get people aware of this. If you do check the Star Tribune, they do have a map. I'll make sure to, if I can, get a copy of the map and put it up on Native Roots Radio for you guys that are tuning in on our Facebook page. You can check it and see how close it is to you. The worst contamination that they found was at what was called the Old Gopher Landfill, which is near Fairmont in Martin County. And the PFAS levels, the PFAS levels, exceeded state drinking water standards by 1,300 times, which is nearly double the second highest level found, which was in Freeway Landfill in Dakota County, which is very nearby. So make sure you're staying aware on the quality of your drinking water in Minnesota.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
That is an eye-opening report there, and I really appreciate you talking about that, Ogama. It's really, I mean, it makes sense, right? Piles and piles of garbage, these landfills. I remember in Oceanside, when I lived on Oceanside, Long Island, when I was there as a kid, the land was flat. It was perfectly flat. Now, I mean, it's a pretty good skiing slope.
It's a mountain.
It's a mountain now. And it has all the methane gas
plugs,
you know, the plugs
or whatever,
that there's always a fire going on. And on a really hot summer day, I mean, for miles, you could just kind of smell that garbagey, kind of nasty smell. And how could anybody think that this doesn't seep into the ground, into the water table, right, into the watersheds, and goes out into our other bodies of water?
Exactly. You know, let's start the news out with some real stuff and how it affects Indian country all over Minnesota and the United States. Ogama, as always, Pini Gigi, for your insight and your news specials. It really starts to show off in a good way, and sometimes it's hard to hear what we got to hear, right, Wen?
Oh, absolutely, but we need to hear it so we can do something about it.
So up next, we have Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350 and Rise Coalition. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
I thought we might howl or something, or do the MN351,
That's for after the next one.
Okay, well, okay.
I'm over here, over organized.
That's awesome. Hey, I hear a little weird feedback, but hey, so this is Tuesday, and Tuesday is Nancy Bolio Day, and we really appreciate Nancy, and she's with Bemidji 350 and Rise Coalition, and welcome, Nancy Bolio.
Well, good evening. Just always honored to hold this space, and I always feel knowledge is power, and this is a good place to find out what's happening here in northern Minnesota. So I just want to give a big shout out to all of the water protectors that stood with us yesterday for the World Water Day prayer here in northern Minnesota. And I also want to give a quick invite. Next Tuesday, we're going to be here in Bemidji having a community round dance. So we're calling on our drums and our dancers to help hold space and remind our local elected officials that we're still here, because we see that our sheriff's department has spent $189,000 to support the Line 3 pipeline, but yet we have our county commissioners, not all, but some, saying that, you know, we don't need to talk about Line 3 here at the Beltrami County Commissioners level because it's not running through our county anymore. So why is it any of our business? Well, if it's not any of our business, we shouldn't be spending $189,000 to support that project. So we just want to remind them in a really good way that we're still here, and it's time to start listening to our local Native tribal nations, either the White Earth, Red Lake, and Leech Lake, in regards to the Line 3 opposition. So I think a lot of good energy, like we've seen at the Trump rally, we're going to kind of duplicate that. And so we're going to have a good time. And it's always nonviolent, peaceful, and prayerful. So again, next Tuesday, and that we down at the waterfront, and we'll have more details. And tomorrow we'll have a Facebook event, so you can follow the Indigenous Environmental Network, Rise Coalition, and the White Earth Amanoman Protector Camp for some of those details. And tonight we have two guests on. One is going to give us a quick update on the Minnesota Court of Appeals of Oral Arguments pipeline. And joining us is Natalie Cook from the Sierra Club. So a big welcome to Natalie, and thank you for being here and sharing this much needed information. And it's on you, Natalie.
Yes, well, thanks. Thanks for having me. So today was one of three lawsuits were heard at the Minnesota State Court of Appeals. It was the oral arguments. So it was when the parties got to show up and present some of what they want to have to say to a panel of three judges at the Court of Appeals. And then Enbridge got a chance to respond. And then we got a chance to say the final word. We're expecting a decision from the State Court of Appeals in June. And so the State Court of Appeals is looking at both the environmental impact statement, the certificate of need, and the route permit. So basically all of the decisions that the Public Utilities Commission made decisions on. And in those lawsuits was the White Earth, Red Lake, and Mille Lacs tribes, as well as Honor the Earth, the Sierra Club, Friends of the Headwaters, and the Minnesota Department of Commerce. So we heard from all of the sides. The attorneys showed up and did a really great job, seemed engaged. They asked a lot of questions. Everyone could watch it, which is sort of, you know, new that it was on Zoom. There was over 300 people watching it today. And now we keep fighting on the front lines and supporting the front lines while we wait that decision in June.
And, you know, Natalie, just eavesdropping today in the hearing, it felt, you know, the judges were asking the right questions, and some of the questions that really, really stand out, you know, the environmental impact study and the route, the need. And I think, you know, just eavesdropping kind of, you know, for the first time in a long time, it felt the right questions were being asked, and that the rebuttals were so strong, and it feels like I left with some hope today. And I don't have a whole lot of hope in this fight in these agencies, but can you reflect on that a little bit and how people felt, like maybe, you know, I know you guys debriefed after, and what kind of energy y'all shared, and looking forward, what do we expect?
Yeah, so I've talked to a few folks on the phone since the hearing this morning. And lots of folks were feeling hope for it. And we did have a debrief afterwards. You know, the seem to be digging into, you know, how, who gets to decide how we're defining need and demand and supplies, right? Because part of what particularly the State Department of Commerce is arguing is that Enbridge didn't give a demand forecast as they're required to under the state law, that they gave actually a supply forecast, that they gave, oh, we have a supply, there's a supply of oil, we need to move it, not there's a consumer demand for oil and proving that, and whose burden is it to prove that there's a need for the oil? Is it Enbridge's? Is it parties? Is it, you know, is it the Department of Commerce? So they really dug into that in a really deep way, and they were also digging into, you know, how the state chose to look at oil spills in the Lake Superior water basin, really digging into some of the details around that. So it was good questions. They were engaged. And, you know, next what we're looking for, so this is one of the appeals. There's also an appeal of the federal 404 water crossing permit at the federal courts. And then there's also an appeal or a lawsuit. Some advocacy groups and tribes are suing the State Pollution Control Agency around the state water crossing permits too. So those are, they're all upcoming. I keep a chart because there's a lot of them to keep straight.
Right. So is what can our listeners do to help stop this pipeline? I know we're, it's far, and basically, you know, just looking at what we saw yesterday, there's not a whole lot of work going on because of the thawing of the rivers and some of the restrictions on our road. But what are some of the ways that you can tell our listeners how they could support our movement yet?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that's something that can feel hard, you know, around the courts, which, right, like, we don't get to talk to judges, we shouldn't get to talk to judges. But, you know, people showed up today with banners and with lights earlier outside of the Court of Appeals building. And I think, you know, I often, when I get that question, I say, listen to the folks on the front lines, be listening to those who are most impacted. Make sure you're following camps on social media and showing up when you're asked to show up. So like Monday, what, Nancy, what you were just talking about is a great example. When you're asked to show up, figure out how to show up. If you can't show up in person right now, you know, figure out like what are your skills, what are your interests, and dive in into, you know, the leadership roles that you can fill with the skills that you have. And so the other thing folks can do is anything you can do to be pressuring President Biden on it. You know, I don't want to, I'm hopeful, right? We're all hopeful that the judges were asking great questions, but we don't have control over what the judges are going to decide. Like, I want to pressure the decision makers that we elect to represent us. And President Biden could revoke the federal permits, which would stop construction. And those permits were issued in the final days of the Trump administration. We don't have to pretend that they're anything but a handout to the oil industry, right? Like, they didn't do real review. Like, it's important that the federal government revokes those permits, goes back to look at them, and stops construction while they're looking at them. So tweet, tag the president, write, call into their comment line, you know, join the virtual rallies, call your Minnesota Congress people and our senators, tell them that they need to be pressuring President Biden to revoke the permits, and just be calling into everyone who will listen.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing the update and informing our listeners of ways they can participate. And then, you know, that we have the youth runners that inspired Standing Rock that are going to be here in northern Minnesota, and they're going to actually stop on through to pick up a couple of our youth here in Minnesota, and they're going to stand in solidarity and they're going to go to Washington, D.C. And request that DAPL and Stop Line 3 take place, or no DAPL takes place and no Line 3. So we're kind of excited for that. That's here in northern Minnesota. And again, you can follow us on our Facebook pages and get some more information on that. IEN is just working on that in the moment right now to share that. So if you're out there and you're listening and you know you're somewhere close to northern Minnesota, Friday from 11 to 5 at the White Earth Monoman Protector Camp, we're going to have some great company, and we're going to go down to the bridge after that, and we're going to drum and pray. So visit with us Friday.
Awesome. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short message.
Stay with us.
Say it again.
Stay with us.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
I don't get to haul still.
Not yet. Not till the next one.
All right, cool. Hey, well, let's hand the show back over to Nancy Boley, Bemidji 350.
Oops, are we on? Okay. All right. So, you know, I just gave a little sneak peek about what Friday looks like. And so our next guest is Joseph White Eyes. He's a 25-year-old from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, and he is a direct action support coordinator with the Cheyenne River Grassroots Collective. And he's been involved with the Dakota Access Pipeline since early 16, and he's heavily involved, and he was a part of last month's run. And I don't want to do all the talking here, so I want to bring up Joseph, and maybe he can give us a current update of what that run was about last month and where we're going April 1st. So welcome, Joseph.
Yeah, so my name is Joseph Whiteyes. Like Nancy said, I'm part of Cheyenne River Grassroots Collective as a direct action support coordinator. So we were approached by some of the young people up on the Standing Rock Reservation about that run that happened last month. And, you know, a lot of our members, a lot of our young people here from our reservation, we're located right underneath the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Our young people have been involved with those runs in the past, when they ran to Omaha, Nebraska, delivering the petition of, you know, over, I think it was 20,000 signatures giving it to the Army Corps of Engineers. And then again, later that year in 2016, running to Washington, D.C., where we had all over 140,000 signatures, delivering it to Obama and the National Army Corps of Engineers headquarters in Washington, D.C. Last month, that run, you know, we figured, well, we're getting, you know, or we have a new president there, one that will hopefully listen to us and one that says he wants to be known as a climate president. We figured, well, let's run again and let's see what kind of, you know, action he can do that he forgot to do or that he didn't do in 2016 when he was in office as the vice president of the United States. So, you know, we started on Cheyenne River, our northern border, and we ran all the way back up to Ocheti Shakoi camp, where they had an ODAPL resistance camp back in 2016 till early 2017. And we delivered that same message that we sent when we ran to Washington, D.C., stating that we didn't want the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we basically called out Biden, you know, for not acting on the Dakota Access Pipeline when it was one of the biggest fights. You know, it could be of the century, it could be of the decade or whatever you want to call it. I mean, this movement that was built around the Dakota Access Pipeline had well over, 20,000 indigenous people that came to one central area. And the Lakota people called on them and asked them to, step up and stand with us because we're fighting for our lives here. We're fighting for our water. And we had all these native people come from all over the world to stand in support, in solidarity against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So that's what that message was about. That run was just really telling Biden to stop this pipeline. If you could stop the Keystone XL pipeline, another pipeline I've been heavily involved with, he can stop this pipeline. And yeah, so that's what that run was about.
So you guys ran like close to 100 miles in sub-zero on in early February, correct?
Yeah, it was negative 17 degrees in the morning when we started running. I didn't think we'd be able to make it, but we did. The resiliency and the everything that that we all had within us to continue that run and to really make it possible was there. We felt our ancestors. It started with a prayer and ended with a prayer. It was a really powerful moment.
Right.
That's really amazing. I'm wondering, where did you stop along the way, to get something to eat or go to the bathroom, or how was that?
On the way up to back to Ocheti Shagoi camp from Cheyenne River, each vehicle we had, three groups running 10 miles at a time. So we kind of did a leapfrog type of run. Every vehicle had their waters, had their snacks, had everything that they needed for those runners to be comfortable and safe and really taken care of. On the way up too, there was a few towns that we stopped in. So that was our break when we needed a break. But we finished it we started at 7 a.m. in the morning mountain time, and we ended the run at 5 p.m. mountain time. So we made it there within, 10 hours running over 100 miles.
Are you a regular runner, like a marathon runner, or is it something that you just kind of did for this particular event?
It was something I did for this event. I'm not a runner personally, but back, when the whole Standing Rock movement was happening in 2016, I was approached by my sister, Bobby Jean Three Legs. And she asked me to, if I wanted to run to Washington, D.C. And I'm like, are you crazy? everyone has these stories about what called them to Standing Rock. And, it was all these spiritual connections. It was, just something pulling them there. But for me, in the beginning, I feel like I didn't have that opportunity to say, hey, I was called for a spiritual reason. I felt like for me personally, I was there because there was nobody else there at the time and somebody had to do it. And so that's what encouraged me to run. That's what encouraged me to be highly involved with the NODAPL movement was because that somebody had to do it and make sure it got done,
Right. And I just want to make note, I was a LPN student when Standing Rock was born, and I live fed every moment of everything you guys were doing. And then there was that one day my heart was so compelled, I had to go to Standing Rock, and I kept going and I kept going. But, what I learned from Standing Rock was that, like you just said, people really need to step it up and protect our water. And sometimes we have to make sacrifices and give up, the fun stuff. But at the same time, what good is anything else if we don't have clean water? So that's, one reason why I stepped it up. And I want to say a big thank you to all you people in Standing Rock for, welcoming there. And I felt like I was at home. And I also carried a small piece of that fire back home, and I've been doing the Line 3 resistance since then. And we do see community again in smaller camps, but it feels good to have that sense of community back. And that's kind of one of the biggest things I miss about Standing Rock was we cared for each other. We were a sense of community again, and we lived with purpose, and we lived for something bigger than ourselves. And I think, you know, being in these movements and inspiring each other is what we got to continue to do. And so, you know, Friday, you guys are going to be in Northern Minnesota here. You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're working alongside, as a Shine River Grassroots Collective, we're working with the Indigenous Environmental Network, and we're working with the Standing Rock Youth Council, not the tribe itself, but the youth council that was formed there some years back. And, you know, well, if he's not going to listen to us on this run that took place about a month ago, we're like, why don't we just take it to D.C., take it straight to him? With that, you know, we're going to be the first big, you know, mass mobilization in D.C. since, you know, the Capitol takeover. So a lot of people are really looking for or looking at that to see how things play out with the whole National Guard and all of that stuff still in Washington, D.C., what it's going to look like on the ground with a mass mobilization of, you know, young people in that area. As you said, you know, we're going to be stopping up in line three. So with organizing this whole thing to Washington, D.C., we figured, you know, why don't we involve line three? So we connected with you and a few others from the line three movement to really push Biden to not only stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, but to stop, you know, line three as well, because we can't have one pipeline stop with while the others are still being built and call it a victory. You know, that's bullcrap if we call that a victory, if we have one stop, but all these other, you know, extractive industries are happening all over the country and happening all over are still going forward with their, you know, work with, you know, digging up Mother Earth, digging up the ground. So, you know, like you said, we're going to be stopping through. We'll be arriving Thursday night, and on Friday, you know, from 11 to 5, we'll be having that water ceremony, a little rally, and a few other things that we're going to be doing with you guys on the ground. So we're looking forward to coming, you know, through, picking up a few of your individuals and taking them all the way to D.C. with us so that we can get, you know, both messages across of stopping Line 3, stopping Dakota Access Pipeline, and really holding, you know, President Biden accountable as the climate president he wants to be.
Yeah. Hey, is there a place where we can support your work? Is there a website that we can scoot people to support? Because I know running is free, but not eating and sleeping and things like that. So where can we, Joseph, where can we support you?
Yeah, for sure. So we're having, we're going to be releasing a thing online. We mainly use Facebook as our collective. You can follow the Shine River Grassroots Collective on how to support on the front lines. You can follow Indigenous Rising Media. A lot of the information will be pumped off of that Facebook page. And you can follow the Standing Rock Youth Council. All three of those pages will be cross-posting basically the same information. So if you want to support us in any way, follow those pages. I haven't been directly involved with all of, you know, how to support us or how to keep us moving forward. But any information you think you'll need to support this movement, to support this caravan to D.C., follow those three information you need. So.
Awesome. Hey, I want to thank Nancy Bolio and Nancy's guest for bringing in the truth here every Tuesday. Nancy, you got 10 seconds. You got a final word before we let you
right.
go.
Friday, the Mississippi Bridge by the LaSalle State Park. Bring your dresses and your drums, and let's support the youth runners on their way to D.C. from 11 to 5. And follow us on Rise Coalition and Water Protector Camp, our Winoma Protector Camp, White Earth, and Bemidji 350 for those locations and event details in Miigwetch.
Be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. That's when we hail. You know what? Before we even get started, Robert, I want to give someone a shout out. I want to give Karen a shout out.
Yeah.
So Karen and Maya, I think, are listening to the show. So that's fantastic. I just want to wish you well, Karen, and get a speedy recovery and feel good.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I want to wish a happy to our first fan ever. I'm sure she's listening.
Tiergan.
Yes.
Yes.
I want to give a shout out to her.
Awesome.
Because I just saw her a couple of weeks ago. It was great to see her. Mm-hmm. I was doing some live streaming, so I couldn't really talk, but yeah. It's always great to see her, and she's doing good.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Fantastic. That's great. My name is Wendy Pilot. My Native American name is Hanajihihani, and I was given that name by Curtis, my Dega. So, as always, Curtis, thank you very much. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States. I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And I'm going to be talking about a story today that's kind of hard to hear, but I need to get it out there and I need people to be aware, and maybe some people could even help. So I got a message today from a mutual friend of Robert and I on Facebook Messenger, asking what this person should do. And it's really hard. So this woman, Teresa, she runs a cat rescue. It's called We Are Fur, W-E-R-F-U-R-R. Ogama will put that up on our live Facebook feed. And it's a really horrible story. What happened is a guy who owns cats in White Earth, in the White Earth area. Teresa was called to the res to rescue this poor cat, but a known abuser who is the cat's owner cut the cat's toe off. Now, this guy was caught by two people. He was caught by two people. Tribal came, but they let him go. And this is a problem. Like, why is tribal letting this known animal abuser go? They have a photographic pictures that show the abuse that happened to this cat. The cat right now is in good hands. It's at a vet. It's getting pain meds, and the toe is already badly infected. So the cat's getting antibiotic therapy for that too. But I want to put this guy out on blast. This guy has been known to abuse other animals and other cats. This guy also has another cat in his possession, an orange cat. Teresa, she left a message with the state, and she's going to also put a call into the tribal chair to see what else can be done. The person's name who cut the toe off the cat, people really should sign a petition and get him in trouble. He needs to be arrested, and this really needs to be taken care of. The PayPal for the rescue is, again, space, the letter R, the letter space, fur, F-U-R-R. You know, 71% of domestic violence victims report that their abuser also targets pets. And there's a direct correlation between animal abuse and other crimes towards people. So Teresa was told that this person would not be arrested for any animal abuse unless he hurts a person. So we have to wait for him to hurt a person. And unfortunately, I'm just going to read a little bit here. This is from the Humane Society of the United States. It's Animal Cruelty Facts and Stats. And it's kind of sad to listen. The shocking number of animal cruelty cases reported every day is just the tip of the iceberg. Most cases are never reported. Unlike violent crimes against people, cases of animal abuse are not compiled by state or federal agencies, making it difficult to calculate just how common they are. However, we can use the information that is available to try to understand and prevent cases of abuse. So really, who abuses animals? Cruelty and neglect across all social and economic boundaries. And media reports suggest that animal abuse is common in both rural and urban areas. This is a big problem. I want to just really, again, go back to the correlation with domestic violence and animal abuse. Data on domestic violence and child abuse cases reveal that a staggering number of animals are targeted by those who abuse their children or their spouse. So I hope that this person doesn't have any children or a partner or spouse with him, because I'm sure that there could be possibility of also more abuse. The state legislature trends. This is the hard part, that animal abuse laws and legislation aren't strong enough. I know, just working with the Humane Society of the United States, every year we have a Humane Lobby Week where we lobby for laws in Minnesota and all over the United States. Every state is lobbying for different laws. Everybody needs to just be aware that the correlation between animal abuse and people abuse is so strong. And I wanted to just read one of my favorite quotes of all time from Mahatma Gandhi, which is, "The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated." Again, on our Facebook page, we put up the rescue organization that Teresa runs. It's called We Are Fur. Mm-hmm. WE R FURR. They have a PayPal account, and if you feel inclined to possibly donate to help with the cat. By the way, the cat was renamed Sebastian by Teresa. So hopefully the cat will be recovering soon. And I just want to bring up this notion of animal abuse. It happens all the time, and we just need to have more strong laws.
Well,
we need to call
people out on it too. Not over the radio though, but mm-hmm. We need to know that the next step is very mm-hmm. easily abuse of children and abuse of women, of people. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be hurting an helpless animal, you're definitely, there's no if, ends,
you're
buts about.
You're capable of
I think it's more incapable.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, I'm not.
I'm trying to be nice. Yeah.
I'm not a psychologist, but I think it's more so I've heard. And
well, that the stat shows that 71% of domestic violence victims also report that their abuser also targeted their pets is strong evidence that it is directly correlated.
Well, okay. Well, thank you, Wendy Peenigy, for all you do, and especially, speaking your truth. That's beautiful, and I appreciate that. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to this show, you are part of the resistance. We're all on trial. From Chief Plentycoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. Peenigy to Nancy Bolio and her guests, and Wendy Pilot, and of course Ogama with the news. We are the seventh generation. We're still here. Free Leonard Peltier.